Hi, Anna here, telling you about Writing Issues, my new website, webinar, and coaching program. To get info about it and to receive my free cheat sheet, the 6 steps to breaking through your issues and becoming a New York Times bestselling author, all you got to do is text 480-418-1411, the word Writing Issues, all caps, no spaces. That number again is 480-418-1411. You will get a text back asking you to respond with your email address. You do it, and voila, my cheat sheet in your inbox. And you'll be up to speed on all things writing issues. And now, back to the show.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God, I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
This is Anna David. You're listening to After Party Pod. It's a podcast all about addiction and recovery. It's part of After Party Magazine, which is part of RehabReviews.com, the world's largest resource for rehab reviews. I am sitting here with a guest, Rob Coble. Did I already pronounce it, mispronounce it?
No, you got it right. You're good. I knew you'd be good.
And he is an Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, 4 years clean, has a crazy story. And when I say crazy, I mean, all our stories are crazy.
Yes.
But this one, you get to go Google afterwards.
Oh, don't. I've been trying to avoid it.
Don't. Go write so many nice things about him that the Google, that goes lower and lower and lower. So it's on page 3 and no one even sees it. Hi, thank you for doing this.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me. I'm a big fan for a long time. You've done some great work.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Especially in regards to recovery and trying to help ease the stigma and erase that and explain, you know, what we go through on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's very important.
Well, thank you. And you too. You're working on the same thing.
Well, it's day by day.
Right?
I hate to use a cliche, but it really is.
One day at a time.
Yes, it
Odette. Is. Odette. Have you ever heard anyone say that?
No. Odette.
It's annoying for one day at a time.
Yeah. Oh, no. That must be the millennials.
I maybe. Maybe.
They're going to hate this.
Now, so tell me about how you came to be sober. And I know what I've read. You tell me.
Basically, I was in Milwaukee and I had just gotten the job to head up their investigative unit. It was something I was really excited about. I'd worked my way up through some other stumbles along the way and thought, you know, I had it going pretty well. Still booze was in the picture.
Yep.
But shortly after I got there, I got a text from a buddy that said, hey, do you realize your ex-wife has written a book? I said, shit, no, I had no idea, you know. And my ex-wife, we married, at that time it was 12 years prior. We were co-anchors.
In Milwaukee?
No, in Clarksburg, West Virginia was our first job.
Okay.
So, and we were divorced by that time for about 12 years.
So you were married for 2 years?
4 years.
4 years.
Yes.
I can't do math. Okay.
No, that's okay.
So, and I don't know how much into this you can go, but you guys were co-anchors, you met, you fell in love, you got married, something like that.
Yes, yes.
And then the relationship?
Well, I mean, the relationship, we met in Clarksburg, West Virginia, went to Boise, and then ended up in Phoenix. She chased those markets, and we both ended up jobs there. I got a job at the Fox station. She was working at the Independent station. And it seems like, you know, we had it all, and, you know, things were going good.
Yeah, golden couple.
Yes, you know, things were all on the rise. And, you know, without a doubt, you know, I'll accept the responsibility for alcohol. Always played a factor. I mean, you got to realize, our first kiss was after a DUI checkpoint when they had pulled me over. And, no, I'm not kidding. So, Christy always knew. Christy Paul is my ex-wife. She works for CNN, and they always knew, well, she always knew I was a partier.
Yeah.
And she was too, a little bit.
Right.
So, but you know, when we first met, those days of like college that trickled over into our first job didn't disappear because I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Surprise.
They don't disappear until we end up in, you know, church basements.
Yeah.
If you're an alcoholic. It's kind of true.
Yeah, smoky church basements. Exactly.
You know, like you just think that this is normal.
Yeah.
For so long.
Yeah.
Until you realize, you know, it's horrible. Anyway, back to you.
No.
Sorry.
Flashback.
A little bit of a flashback just now. Okay, so your first kiss is at a DUI checkpoint.
Yes.
So, but did you get taken in?
By her?
No, by the DUI people.
No.
So you passed it. So she was like, oh, it's totally fine.
Yeah, the flashing blue and red lights behind me. I said, look, I've been waiting a long time to do this. And I grabbed her from the, you know, behind her head and kissed
Picturesque.
Her.
Picturesque. Okay.
So look, you know, she knew I partied, you know, and enjoyed a good time. And you know, we got married quickly, and then, you know, we made it to Phoenix, and so the booze was there, and it was certainly an issue, and there was, you know, a lot of frustration. We sought help through marriage counselor and stuff, too, but, you know, what they really weren't identifying was the alcohol, and Christy and I were both frustrated. We were scared, And I think that, you know, trying to hide it was, you know, something that was very important too. And then at, you know, certain points, I just didn't want to, you know, I had to be the man. I, you know, I could control this. I could do these things.
So did you try to get sober, anything like that, the back
yeah,
then?
Yeah. I think they gave me, I forget.
Anabuse.
No, they didn't do Anabuse. I did naltrexone for a while.
You did?
Yes.
But isn't that for opiates?
For opiates, but they also found that it was a use for alcohol, that it would curb
the cravings. Did it?
Yeah, but I didn't deal with the issues that were underlying.
Right.
You know, so that was even, you know, after the fact, they tried, you know, a bunch of different things, but the main thing, and that was, you know, even the marriage counselor should have probably passed this on to substance abuse. So,
yeah.
You know, in Milwaukee, what happens is, you know, it's been 12 years. She's remarried, three kids, happy, you know, in CNN, and I'm doing my thing. And then I find out there's a book. And
so
then,
that had already happened. She was on CNN. She had the three kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you were not in touch.
We hadn't been in touch in 6-7 years until I got the text from a buddy in Phoenix that said, you know, your ex-wife's written a book. Good for her. I always sort of wanted to write a book, but I'm like, what would she have fucking written about? You know, whatever. And then I was getting ready, and I looked, and the follow-up text came through. It's about your marriage.
Right.
And I said, shit. You know, and I was scared.
Yeah.
And I was hurt because I certainly know since we were divorced, it wasn't a how to have a happy marriage.
Yep.
You know, so I got online. I looked up, you know, her CNN Facebook page, and I saw where she described it was a hard decision, but she'd be writing about her marriage that was, you know, how she escaped a verbally abusive marriage to me.
And what did you think when you saw that?
You know, I remember, you know, it was like such a kick in the gut. You know, I was sad. I think I, you know, just about broke down and cried. You know,
bet.
I was scared.
Yeah.
It brought back those feelings of shame and guilt. And of course, I'm still drinking at this point.
Yep.
You know, so I can't process this. I never processed the divorce in the first place. Just moved on.
Right.
You know,
right.
We all moved on. Just keep going. Keep chug along. And and then I was pissed.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, what is this? And you know, the worst thing you can do, the book wasn't going to drop till February.
Right. When was this?
This was probably in the fall. So it was, you know, it was like October, I think, November. And so the worst thing you can tell an alcoholic and an addict is, you know, hey, on Friday at the end of work is, you know, I got something I got to talk to you on Monday about.
Yeah.
Shit, I had all these months to do. So I knew a PR publicist that's like, I'll get an advanced copy of the book. And I did. And I read it. And, you know, the wheels came off the cart, you know, at that time. So the usually binge drinking turned into a daily thing after work and added, you know, weight like you couldn't believe. I couldn't sleep. So I was doing, you know, over-the-counter sleep meds.
Yeah.
Grabbing those and then ordering illegal diet pills online, hoping not to get caught. So it was a real shit show brewing up till, you know, the final.
Were you conscious of the fact that you were trying to blot out what was coming?
Yeah, because I know, you know, as an investigative reporter, I was doing a lot of stories against politicians. You know, Scott Walker, the governor of Milwaukee. The first thing that, you know, I know these people will do is they'll look for anything they can use against me. And there was already plenty of stuff. I'd spent time in, you know, America's toughest sheriff's jail, you know, for DUI. I, you know, got special treatment there. There was enough already out there.
Right.
But now you have an ex-wife that's written a 320-page book and recorded a music song, you know, a couple country music songs to go with it. So I was scared, and I knew that that would have a powerful impact. But, you know, drinking, there was no way I could navigate that. I could just wait for the shoe to drop.
I don't know if I can ask this. Why do you think she did it?
You know, I think there was a couple of reasons. I think, you know, part of it is probably therapeutic for her. The other part, you know, look, without a doubt, I think it's self-serving.
Yeah.
And I think her friends, Robin Mead is a real good friend of hers. She was in our wedding, you know. They all have books. Sanjay Gupta, who is it, the one I hate? Nancy Grace, Dr. Drew, you know. And CNN and Jeff Zucker always seem to, instead of CNN, it's like, you know, the Home Shopping Network. You know, what can we promote besides news? You know, you got a book, you got a song. We'll put you all on there. And they did that.
Right.
Didn't work for Brian Williams, but it worked for Christy, you know?
Right. So it was like, what's your story, Christy? Well, I've got a story about, you know?
Yeah. And I think I really regret, you know, those things. You know, when she was on Dr. Drew, he summed it up and he sort of put her in her place a little bit. And he said, look, this is simple. This is all about alcohol. He's an alcoholic. I feel bad for the guy. He never got help. He goes, no AA, no Al-Anon, nothing gets better. And that's what, you know, she has, you know, alcoholics running in her family. I didn't find out till after that her grandfather had drank himself to death.
Were you in touch with her? Have you been in touch with her since?
No.
Never?
No.
Wow. And When was this incident, the thing with the cops, you were peeing outside? I don't understand chronologically when that was.
So that was 2012.
Okay.
And so it was 4 years ago. And on the heels of all this coming out, it was 6 months of her promoting the book. I found everybody breaks. I'm a fan of 24. So even Jack Bauer breaks.
Right.
I ran out of booze. And for some reason in Milwaukee, they don't sell alcohol like at Trader Joe's. I needed my $2 chuck. And they don't sell it after 9. And I was out. And I lived in a great place. So I put on a hat, saw the neon lights at Bar Louie. I had like 200 feet to go, and you know, then I was just really drinking at my problems. And I'm sitting at that bar, and it was a couple glasses of wine to the Jaeger bombs, another glass of wine to wash it down. And then on my way home, walking, a security guard said in the police report he followed me because I was stumbling. I know there was a law that you couldn't stumble, and I was walking home. But for some reason, 75 feet from my front door to the condo was the Apple Store, and I didn't make it to the bathroom. I decided it was time to take a leak on the side of the Apple Store.
Right. And yeah. So then what happened? Were you in a blackout? Or?
It was getting to that. I should have been in bed in about 10 minutes, and I would have been a happy night. You know, not real happy, but you know, I would have survived another night of a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And so I was getting there, but so he was mad that he couldn't ban me because I lived there. So he did the next best thing, is he called the cops, the real ones. No rent a cop.
Right.
So they rolled up, and then... you know, I became the asshole that, you know, Christie wrote about drunk.
So then they took you in?
Yes. Disorderly conduct. I refused to put my cell phone away, and then I pulled the ultimate horrible thing I said I'd never do, is, do you know who you're messing with?
Right.
They didn't have any freaking clue, I'm sure, until they got back and Googled and figured it out. You know? Then they knew.
And then they were like, we got the right guy.
Super value meal. They had the booking, you know, video. They had the outside surveillance, everything.
And so was that the incident that got you sober then?
Yeah.
And so what happened? So you wake up?
Well, the next day I woke up. My buddy was a lawyer. He was with me at the end of that night. He picked me up from the jail, and I woke up, and I was sore. And I had when the cop arrested me, I pulled him over. I was so drunk, and he fell on top of me. He was a big guy. And I realized it all started coming back to me that this was not an ordinary night. Yes, I'm dehydrated. I don't feel great, but oh, shit, something happened, and I couldn't remember the details.
But you were in jail.
They just processed me and, you know, did a, you know, and released me. So I was at home, you know, so I went to work later that morning, you know, with a scraped up face, lying to people.
And so?
Bargaining. I went back to AA, you know, I went to the shrink and, you know, told her what happened. And it's like, what are you going to do? And, you know, so I went back to AA and was like, God, if you just give me this break and nobody finds out, I'll stay sober. And it just didn't work. 2 weeks later, you know, somebody leaked it, and holy shit, hit the fan. And then they connected with Christie's book, and the whole shit show just, you know, came to an end. And I resigned from my job, took accountability for that night, which to me was important because it's the first time really stepping forward saying, you know, that's just not me, and went off to North Carolina for treatment for 90 days.
Where'd
sober since. I went to Fellowship Hall.
Okay.
So that's in Greensboro, small little area.
And were you kicking and screaming? Were you surrendered?
You know, I was pretty surrendered at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember, you know, just being in the squad car going, Jesus Christ, I had the perfect plan. I couldn't even operate an elevator with my finger and get home in 100 feet. It's pathetic. On top of the fact it's Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where drinking is a pastime.
Yeah.
And it was unacceptable to these folks, my actions.
Right.
He had to leave.
Yeah.
You know? So I needed it, but I was scared. You know? I was sick of myself. I was fed up. I was full of shame.
And then what happened? What made you, do you still want to drink? Did the desire get removed?
I think the desire, you know, was removed quickly. That was enough for me. Maybe not, you know, for other people, but it was enough for me. I don't have the cravings, you know, that I once did because I know where it'll take me back now. Mm-hmm. The toughest part is, I'm sure you hear people say all the time, is living life. And that's a challenge. I mean, I see your face and that's a challenge. But, you know, I can make much better decisions now than I could, you know, when I was drinking and using. That's an important thing I'm, you know, very grateful for. And I know where it will take me, and I know where it will take me back quickly. I had good runs. You know, I'd go 6-7 years. But, you know, during that time, you built up a lot. And you freaking destroyed it. Marriage, career eventually. They say there's three bottoms now. And for men, it's ultimately the career. You lose the wife, the girlfriend, all this other stuff. And then when you hit it again, the final one is your career.
I've never heard that, actually.
Yeah, there's some new research about it.
Oh, really? Literally studies prove that when you lose a career, you get sober?
Well, for men, it takes three things. They say there's three bottoms. But for men, it's when we finally fuck up our career that we pay attention.
I don't know. I mean, to me, it's like a bottom is, you know, whatever it is emotionally, mentally, spiritually, it's not really about what's happening.
Yeah, no, I think so. Yeah, and it certainly was in my case. I mean, you know, there was no spirituality. You know, I was void. I hated myself. And, you know, all those things that, you know, keep us drinking.
And so what has been some of the work? And like when you say the challenge isn't not drinking, but it's life, what do you mean?
You know, I lost a career that I love that I thought would take me in. You know, I'm a big fan of Joseph Campbell, philosopher, and the mm-hmm. hero's journey and everything. So one of the things he said is you've got to let go of the life that you envisioned to get the life that's waiting for you. And I had envisioned, you know, turning old and, you know, doing news and doing all that stuff. And it wasn't going to happen because I was not very marketable after pissing on the Apple store, cussing out the cops.
Right.
So the hard part was when people would Google me, I lost jobs because of that.
Yep.
You know, then there were challenges of, you know, living in a sober living where the guy who ran it liked to be called Dog for Dog the Bounty Hunter. He was an asshole and shouldn't have been around people, period. Two of my friends OD'd and died a week and a half apart from each other. At that house, mm-hmm. you know, not, you know, that didn't happen there, but it happened while they were away. Mm-hmm. And I was scared shitless. I couldn't find a job. So Hollywood came calling and I ended up doing background work because I could get a couple meals a day. I could get the fuck out of that house and I could be safe and I could, you know, escape.
So you were in a sober living here in L.A.?
No, it was Greensboro, North Carolina. I stayed there because there was no going back to Milwaukee. And my brother lives in Charlotte, so, you know, it was close to family.
And so how did you end up here doing extra work?
Well, I actually did the extra work, and North Carolina had a tax incentive, so I did Under the Dome, numerous things, Under the Dome, Eastbound and Down, a lot of different shows and TV, did some acting, and picked it up there. So we were really booming down there. I ended up out here. I was working for a minor league baseball team. It was really the first job that I got in Charlotte, and I just wasn't doing it. And at the end of the season, I had said I was leaving, and some producers had come to me and said a casting agent out here had contacted me in Charlotte and said, look, we're doing a documentary about five people who are going to be given the world's best life coaches to get their life in order, different categories, love, relationships, and then my category, you fucked up your life, so we can help you fix it. So I said, okay, I could do that. They're not going to pay me, so I sold my Emmy Award on eBay to a guy.
How much?
Everybody asked that question.
Of course. How much?
$4,000 to a guy in Germany.
What do you want with an Emmy Award he didn't win? That's what I have to ask the guy in Germany.
A friend of mine, we met through Andy Dick. He actually pointed out something. He's like, he asked the same question. He's like, email the guy back and find out. So I did. And I said, so why? Everybody asked me this question.
Yeah.
And he said, because I love the entertainment industry. Yeah. I love these things. And for me, it's something that other people can't have. Yeah. I'm looking for an Oscar one day. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to help you there.
Yeah.
Maybe another Emmy.
I don't know if those are ever for sale, but you never know.
No, you don't. So, you know, I came out here and shot that movie for 2.5 weeks.
Or TV show?
It's a movie.
The life coach thing?
Mm-hmm.
What's it called?
It's called Leap. It'll be hitting film festivals now, or just about now, or coming out. So, the coaches that were involved, Marcy Shimoff, Jack Canfield, John Gray.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, I don't know the first one, but I certainly know those second two names.
Yeah, you'll know some other ones. Mark Thompson had worked with Sir Richard Branson and Steve Jobs. So they followed us, just wrapped up, you know, about a year. And my goal was to come out here and work in treatment. And that's, you know, what I wanted to do and what I've been doing in the last year, helping people, you know, working in treatment.
So cameras were following you around for a year, or was it just kind of occasional?
Yeah, it was occasional. They didn't have the money necessarily. And they did a great job in crowdfunding. I think they got about $800,000 or something for it. But they would, you know, we did the coaching sessions in Malibu for a period of like 3 months. And then I stayed. You know, the other ones went back to Louisiana, New York, Singapore, where
so
the other
clients.
And so
did you get sessions with, like, Jack Canfield? And
I didn't work with Jack. One of the other people did. Marcy Shimoff, I worked with her. Who else was part of it? John DeMartini is a guy that I really enjoyed, too. Mm-hmm. You'll know all of them because I think you've been into the coaching world a little bit.
Yeah, no, I only know who Jack Canfield and then John Gray, obviously.
Yes.
I just heard him speak recently.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the Bulletproof Conference, you know.
Look at you.
Yeah. And so you ended up here. So you kind of use that to get out to L.A.
Yeah. I mean, they talked me into the fact is they're like, look, if you want to work with people in addiction recovery, come here. I had no idea how strong of a community it was. Best move I ever could have made.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did that for a little bit. And then during my Fox years that I worked there, I covered all of Robbie Knievel's stunt jumps. He's the son of Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
They were shooting a movie out here, Chasing Evil, which is now in film festivals. And they're like, holy shit, it's about Robbie's journey, keeping the family name alive, but into sobriety.
Oh, he's sober?
Yes, he's sober now, too. So we both reconnected sober, and, you know, I did, you know, part of that. And
what do you mean? What did you do on that?
Well, they interviewed me about the days we partied.
Okay.
They interviewed about the journey. You know, what it's going to take. Robbie was pushing about a year and a half probably now.
Mm-hmm.
I had three, you know, plus at the time. Mm-hmm. So they're like, you know, can you put that in perspective? And you guys all partied together.
Mm-hmm.
You all lost things, you know. And Robbie's a little bit older than me. I think he's 55 now. So, you know, I sat down and did interviews with them. I'm excited to see the movie. I mean, it's... they're going to announce a couple film festivals coming up here soon.
And so you, how did you start working in treatment? How did that happen?
So the goal that the coaches helped me see was that I needed to, I blame Google a lot, but they said, you know, really, you know, why don't you take a look at yourself? Have you ever forgiven Christy? And I'm like, hell no. You know, so I carried that grudge and that resentment for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so as part of the process, you know, I found forgiveness for her. I started working on myself. And then it was weird. All these things just really started to open up. And before I know it, I was a buddy of mine lives right here on Hollywood Boulevard. And he's like, you know, I got a friend that I just did something with that works at this treatment center in Malibu. And he didn't know that, you know, I had been a big, you know, supporter or, you know, fan, I guess, in some aspects of Bob Forrest and his journey. I saw that and I was fairly new in sobriety and I was like, holy shit, if he can do it, I can do it. And so he's like, let me introduce you. So
you mean
that,
you were a fan of his music?
Not Thelonious Monsters as much, but I found the music after his documentary. So I like his newer stuff. You know, I like a lot of the stuff. I don't know if you've ever seen him. I went down to Santa Monica to Gibson's and I said, it's an amazing journey that he takes you on. You know,
what do you mean? Takes you on?
Hell yeah. I mean, through his music and the times of like his using and going through.
I did see the documentary. I did a story on the director who's awesome.
Yes, I hear she's Deidre. Really, really. Yes, yeah. Yes.
And then I know him just from doing Drew's podcast. Uh-huh. Have you ever done Drew and
well,
Pop?
Drew, you know, Drew and I haven't talked. I mean, it's not necessarily.
But you said that he was the one who pointed out what the story was to your ex-wife.
Yeah, well, it didn't, you know, necessarily make things, you know, perfect. I mean, there was talk that I was going to talk to him after, you know, then when this all happened, and then CNN advised him. They thought I was going to maybe sue or something, but advised him not to talk. But, you know, I will share this, you know, is that importantly, that night in Milwaukee, both of those people, they, you know, I owe them a thank you.
Yeah, you mean the security guard.
Well, yeah, all those, but definitely probably Christy and Dr. Drew, because it changed my life. Well, yeah. I wasn't happy. That was what set me over. That broadcast set me over. Why? Because he nailed the problem in my life,
right.
Booze.
Right.
It was a long-distance intervention. It was a slap in the face I was not ready to deal with.
Right.
And it tore off the Band-Aid of that marriage and the mistakes that I had made and the things I'd read.
Did you really not know that that was the problem until you heard him say that?
Well, I knew it was, but when somebody does, you know, I had no problem with, you know, drinking. You know, when Christy left, you know, there's no accountability. I was out, you know, chasing women, doing all the
right,
stuff that you
right.
normally do, and
right.
but there was no accountability. I just didn't want to deal with it, and
yeah.
I didn't have to worry about it.
Did you go through the process? I don't know if you do steps and all of that stuff, or like making amends?
I didn't get to the step of making amends. It was very difficult for me in North Carolina. I found it very cliquish. They weren't mm-hmm. nice to me. I don't expect them to roll out a red carpet, so don't get me wrong on that, but I didn't connect.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came back out here, wow, it was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And they pushed things aside. You know, I can mention pod. I can mention, you know, whatever I used. You're
yeah.
nodding your head, you know, in an AA room and not get run out.
Yeah.
And that's important to me because I'm there to heal. I'm there to learn. And so I've been giving it a try, you know, out here. I need to, you know, better myself. I've got to find a yoga place. I've got to do more things in self-care. And that's part of, you know, what I've been learning.
So you've never really done it.
I've done a fifth step.
You know, okay, so you have a sponsor and all that
I
stuff.
Did, you know, for a while, but I haven't picked that up here. It's
uh-huh.
what I'm looking at doing
How
now.
How long have you been here?
I've been, look at you. It'll be a year. I came out here in September, so it's a little over a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I was chasing and what I tend to do, and that was, you know, I had to get a job. I had no plan when I came out here.
Yeah.
Limited amount of money, you know,
yeah.
that I had saved. So I got the job, you know, at Bob's place and started working, you know, through
okay,
there.
Okay, so you reached out. So your friend works there.
Yeah, put me in touch with Jamie Carpenter, who's the spiritual director, and he's like, Bob got me sober. And I'm like, holy shit. So Bob, you know, is part of the documentary. We met and it was thrilling for me, you know, to
yeah.
be able to pick his, you know, brain and say, hey, you know, these are my skills. Where can I maybe fit in to the,
is this
the
Evan?
Treatment? Evan and Jared. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Evan Haynes and Jared. Yep. Great.
Yeah, yeah.
I love those guys.
Yeah.
They were great.
I know his wife is the loveliest ever. And she was one of my first podcasts.
Oh, really?
Alexis.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Very
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. She's
so
great.
I met him. When I went to their house to interview her, but this was years ago.
Uh-huh.
She's the coolest. Talk about a story, transformation.
I know. Well, and he told me that too. Like when I came to them, because they allowed the cameras up there, and back then it was Acadia, and you know, now it's Aloe.
Yeah.
And it made me feel good. Evan, you know, had a real good connection, still do with him.
Yeah.
And you know, was walking up that driveway, if you haven't been in there, it
no.
felt like coming home.
Oh, going to
Acadia? Aloe, yeah.
And so they changed names to Aloe, and mm-hmm. Bob Forrest is still there?
Yeah, he's still doing a group. I think they classify him as founder. On Tuesdays, he does a group, you know, a process group there,
mm-hmm.
and he's still, you know, heavily involved. Even more so in the last year that I've been there, I've
mm-hmm.
seen him doing a little bit more social media and stuff, but he sold it to Evan and Jared. I think Bob told me a couple years back.
Oh, Bob sold it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. So, but you don't work there anymore.
No. No. So, you know, what I realize is, you know, I love your career. I mean, you know, you follow the stuff and you're so actively involved in helping and, you know, spreading the message about addiction and mm-hmm. recovery that, you know, part of the skills and the things I miss are, you know, meeting people and telling stories. Mm-hmm. So we shot a sizzle reel. I guess I can talk a little bit about it, but it's a little bit about my journey. But it's the people that you meet. It's the purpose and passion. People that make it or, you know, chase their dreams, you know, I'm just infatuated with. Mm-hmm. Khalil. Rafati.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, worked in treatment. Sort of didn't feel that, you know, he was getting a little disgusted with it. I don't think you guys talked about it on your podcast.
Do you know Khalil?
I've met him a couple times, yeah. Uh-huh. So, and I love his story. And then he found his niche. It's about finding your niche, and mm-hmm. he loves fitness. And Sun Life Organics has been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So we've all found our way. You found your way. Mm-hmm. He's found his way. Plenty of other people, and I'm finding my way. Mm-hmm. So what we realized, we shot a sizzle reel with a bunch of people, and Andy Dick has helped me put together like a one-person show and a monologue.
How do you know Andy?
Through recovery.
Okay.
You know, and he's got a place. Actually up the street from you. You should go. The Loft, where we do some performances, Pantages, right behind Pantages Theater.
Like, what do you mean a place? Like a performance place? A sober place? Like what is
it?
Yeah.
He had Margaret Cho down there the other day. He does some stuff. Meg, his daughter, does some producing. So uh-huh. they do like, they write one act plays and they'll perform them on Sundays.
That's so cool.
So Andy helped me. It's hard for me to necessarily get up in front of people and do a lot of that stuff. So Andy helped me with a monologue and then a one man show.
And it's about your story.
Yeah.
And so what do you want? What would you want to have happen?
I think, you know, getting back into producing, hopefully as a story, you know, I guess I'll say it now, but, you know, it'll be called Story Junkie. Yeah, uh-huh. I'd love to have you on it. And, you know, part of it is...
It's a TV thing?
It's going to be a TV thing. So, and what it is it's finding the purpose and passion and taking you in the element that, you know, you chased after, sharing how you made yours. It's not all about recovery. Mm-hmm. It's about different things. Mm-hmm. Robbie Knievel has his own thing. There's a whole bunch of different people mm-hmm. that are involved in it. And it's not all just celebrities or mm-hmm. anything like that. It's about finding your purpose and passion in life and chasing it no matter what. What will you do? For me, it was getting sober, selling my Emmy Award.
Yep.
Taking that leap of faith, going 2,000 miles out here.
Yep.
There's so many other people. The Uber drive that I had come down here. I love that shit.
Yeah.
And I miss it. So what I realized in all this time, and that's really what it's about, is that I'm a story junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't shake it. I got to mm-hmm. meet people mm-hmm. and I want to show that. So I'll send you the copy of the trailer, the sizzle reel.
You made a sizzle reel
where
you're interviewing people and getting their stories.
Yep. And it starts with, you know, basically setting up what happened to me and then saying, look, I met interesting, crazy people. Andy Dick being one of them, you know, Mike Tyson I've worked with over the years. You know, a lot of people that we've done through that have all ended up sober, too.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah. So, you know, that's there. What would my perfect life be? I'm going off to New York to work with Lenny Dykstra, the former Mets, Phillies, now New York Times bestselling author who wants to launch his reality show House of Nails. His mm-hmm. nickname playing was Nails. So we're getting on a party bus. I wouldn't call this necessarily the House of Recovery, but we're getting on a party bus headed to the the Thursday football game to get a little personality and kick off his thing. And he asked me to, you know, help produce and do the interviews with him. So I leave.
Is that something where, like, do you feel like your sobriety will be challenged
by
that?
I knew you'd ask. No, but I think I want to watch it. I want to watch it very closely. You know, I don't really hang out at bars, you know,
Right. Do you hang out with, you know, sober people, people who drink?
A mix. I think you got to have a mix.
You know,
one of my, you know, challenges is that, you know, I was feeling for a while coming out here that everything became, my destination became just, you know, the rooms.
Yeah.
And I can't handle that.
Yeah.
You know, it's AA or, you know, my recovery is always a vehicle, you know, and I'm going to jump in it, but I'm going to drive that car freaking someplace to wherever it's going to take me.
I think, yeah. And I mean, what's nice is that it's like everybody gets their own option. Like if people want to get sober and like just stay doing that, fantastic.
Yeah.
If they want to not do that at all, fantastic.
Right.
Like it's really truly, and I mean, this is something that's taken me 16 years of sobriety to understand mm-hmm. that like, I got my way of doing it. You've got your way of doing it. You know, the people who listen have their way of doing it. And there is no, quote, right way.
And that's the important thing. What you just nailed is you better find a way to do it.
Yeah.
That works for you.
And stop worrying about all the people that tell you there is a right way to do it. Because we don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's why I'm brutally honest about AA and things. And I'm not knocking that. But I know there's somebody else out there that's struggling or felt the same way that may hear this and say, oh, shit. Well, then I can still have recovery.
Yeah.
I can still do whatever. And I think that's the important part of being so honest and brutal. I'm not going to tell you, yes, I go to 3 meetings a week and, you know, I have a sponsor and we work, you know, I work my 10th step and do all that every night.
If it's not true. Yeah, it's not true. Don't, you know.
You know, but I need to do better in certain things and I'll admit that. That's part of this journey.
Well, I think this is a good note to wrap up on. I thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
And yeah, so this has been After Party Pod. You can find it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and everywhere else where you can find podcasts. So, and where can people find you online?
Yeah, Rob Kobel, Facebook, K-O-E-B-E-L, and Rob2237 Instagram.
And don't Google him.
Thanks, Henry.